I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. It's time for Peanuts, Cracker Jacks, and rooting for the home team, so we're heading out to the ball game. Today's the home opener for our boys in blue, so we're here a few hours before the first pitch to give you a behind-the-scenes perspective into opening day at the K. We'll talk to a groundskeeper about what it takes to get things up and running, a longtime season ticket holder about the traditions of opening day, as well as the director of KC's Hall of Fame about our most notable players. Plus, KCUR's Greg Eklund will join us for a conversation about the team and the season ahead. It's Up to Date, following the Sours News. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. It's a big day in Kansas City, opening day at the K, and we're coming to you live from Kauffman Stadium to get an inside look at what goes on here as the Royals open their 2012 season. Good morning, everybody. The Royals take the field against the Cleveland Indians today shortly after 3 o'clock. Today we'll talk with the head groundskeeper who has the field in absolutely pristine condition today. We'll visit with a man who controls everything the fans see and hear inside this stadium, and we'll talk to the director of the Royals Hall of Fame. Also today we'll chat up Steve Pack, who's been a season ticket holder since 1969. That's loyalty through thick and a whole lot of thin. But first up today, the man in charge of the shape of the playing field, and that's head groundskeeper Trevor Vance. And Trevor, nice to have you. Good morning.
Thanks a lot.
You ready to go?
We're ready. We always try to set a goal to be ready a week ahead of time. And we were able to make it this year with the great weather Mother Nature provided us, and we're just ready for Royals baseball.
How big a difference did that make, having the really nice warm spring, Trevor?
It was huge. I mean, normally we have an earlier home opener. This being April 13th, and, you know, Mother Nature giving us 80-degree weather in March.
Yeah.
I mean, we're 2 or 3 weeks ahead of schedule grass-wise, and it's never been this strong and healthy going into the home opener.
You know, for the first time in my life, Trevor, I'm sitting here in the Diamond Club, which is where all the rich folks get to sit. I'm sitting here looking out on this field, and it looks like it's absolutely perfect. Is it, or are there spots I can't see from here that might show a flaw or two?
It's about as close to it was perfect yesterday before we had our first workout. So we're about 99.9% perfect right now, and that's our goal, to make it as perfect as possible every day and give the players what they want and give the fans something beautiful to be proud of.
And what does perfect mean to you? What is perfect?
Well, when it comes to the ball field, really the patterns and everything everybody sees out there, that's for the fans. The game's played on the dirt. You know, 70% of the game is played on the dirt, so players want consistency, playability, and just true hops, so they know every day that ball is going to react to that infield the same way it did the night before and the week before. So, you know, you really have to work that dirt and get it as consistent as possible.
So when you get feedback from the players, what kinds of feedback do they give you about the condition of the field? What do you hear from them?
Well, we're very fortunate this year, and even so last year, we have a very young group that a lot of them we're just happy to be in the big leagues.
Yeah.
we have had some ball players in the past. Joe Randa comes to mind, that no matter what we did, that was never right. He always wanted that dirt to be really, really wet. And, you know, it's kind of an oxymoron. You know, you're growing up thinking, please don't rain, please don't rain. And before every ball game, you see us out there putting water on the dirt.
Yeah.
So, you know, the moisture is what controls the how hard it is or how soft you get it. You always want to provide traction, but you know, most part of the players, like I said, they want that consistency, and some players like it a little softer than others. And throughout the season and early on, you'll get feedback for them. Maybe the shortstop wants it really soft where he stands, where the second baseman might want it really hard. So we'll get constant feedback and make adjustments.
And do you make adjustments for individual players like that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they are the players are our tool. I mean, that is our tool to gauge how we're doing, and we want to provide them as much home field you know, home cooking as possible. So if we can make them feel better or play better, absolutely, we'll do it.
We're visiting with Trevor Vance. He's the head groundskeeper here at Kauffman Stadium. Did you play baseball yourself?
You know, I gave up baseball my freshman year.
What happened?
Well, I wasn't very good. I'm not going to lie to you. I made a decision that the summertime that I'd start working out and getting ready for football season. So, and when you can't, you know, you can't hit your weight and you're too slow to play the outfield, there's not much room for you out there on a ball field.
You look like more of a football player to me than a baseball player, Trevor.
Yeah, I never would have thought I'd be my career would be in baseball as poor as I played.
How did you get in this position to be the head groundskeeper here at the K?
My senior year in 1985, I was looking for a summertime job to make money before I went away to school, and a couple other kids that I went to high school with had worked out here in 84, and they had some openings, so I came out here and interviewed with George Toma, and
yeah,
he said, well, we'll give you a try. You know, if we don't like you, all we can do is fire you. And I've been here ever since.
You picked a good year to start, sir.
You know, it was a great year. Unfortunately, and you look back, you kind of took it for granted. You know, like 85, we won the World Series. Well, you just assumed you do that every year.
Yeah. What's the hardest part of what you do out here?
The weather.
Adjusting to it.
You know, Kansas City weather is so rare. I mean, this is one of the most difficult places in the country to grow grass successfully because, you know, we get as cold as Minnesota and we get as hot as Texas. So there's not one grass that just thrives and succeeds all season long. So, you know, right now we got cool season grass and it's loving this cool weather, but come July when it's 100 degrees, it kind of wants to slam on the brakes and go to sleep, and you got to push that plant, and then you got to put a tarp out there that's 170 foot by 170 foot and stress the plant. So the weather's the most difficult thing we deal with, but you know, I learned many years ago what you can't control you can't worry about, and we just deal with it every day.
You don't change out the kind of grass that's on this field as the season progresses, do you?
We have in the past. Yeah, we've the infield grass, where the tarp covers, we have gone to a warm season grass in the middle of the season. And why do we do that? It's to provide the players the best surface year-round. So when the heat hits us, that grass is thriving in the heat instead of really taking a step back and slowing down and not recovering.
Well, see, you learned from a pretty good guy, George Toma, the legendary George Toma, right?
Absolutely. I would not be where I'm at without George Toma. You know, a lot of people say, well, did you go to school for this? And I'm like, yeah, the school of George Toma. You know, the man's 83 years old this year. He's still doing Super Bowls, still taking care of spring training sites. He installed a work ethic in everybody. And, you know, the two things George always told people is if you're going to do it right the first time so we don't have to waste any time coming back. And then three words that separate everybody, and that was, and then some. Do the job and then some. That's the difference between good and great. So that's what he's instilled in me, and that's what I try to instill in our crew today, that, you know what, it's a great place to work. All of Kansas City is going to see your finished product. So do the job and then some.
Well, what was it about working out here that intrigued you so much that you wanted to make it your career?
Well, you know, it's funny because I went to college for 2 years and I changed my degree four times looking for that one degree that you really didn't have to
yeah,
work at.
I hear you.
But I looked forward to coming back to work every summer. And finally, like lightning hit me one day and said, well, if you enjoy coming back to work every summer, why don't you pursue this? So I went to George and said, George, I want to be a groundskeeper. He said, no, you don't, Trevor. The hours are terrible. The pay is terrible. And you'll never see your family. I'm like, no, I really want to do it. And he took me under his wing, and like I said, I wouldn't be where I'm at without him.
So is this a six-month out-of-the-year job, or is there more to it than that?
Oh, this is almost turned into a year-round job. You know, you hope for some snow and moisture in January and February, but Mother Nature will decide when we're done maintaining this field. You know, we've mowed as late as into December, and sometimes we'll get early snows and shut it down.
So when the last game is played here at the K every season, you don't just wrap it up and go home. You're here taking care of the lawn.
No, you got to remember, we're dealing with a living cell out there. It's going to continue to grow. And we just can't lock the gates and come back in March and get it in shape. We actually try to get all our opening day work done in October and November, whether we're sodding or seeding or whatever. So come the springtime, because the weather's so unpredictable, we're ready to go.
I got to ask, how good a shape is your lawn at your house in Lee's Summit?
Well, you know, this year it's pretty good. But
so
I can't,
far.
I can't
they
take
all look good this time of
year.
Yeah,
I can't take the credit. Mother Nature deserves all the credit for my yard and Lee Summit.
Hey, how well do you get to know the ball players during the course of a season?
You know, you get to know them fairly well. They're very friendly. And, you know, like I said, I started 28 years ago, and back then all the players were older than me. And now I'm older than all the ball players.
Yeah.
So there's a good mutual relationship. They respect and appreciate what we do, and we appreciate and respect what they do. So it's a good relationship. You don't want to get too close to any of them because you never know when somebody's going to get traded. Next thing you know, your best buddy just left town. So it's a good relationship.
It's a business, right?
Absolutely.
That's Trevor Vance. He's the head groundskeeper out here at Kauffman Stadium. And, Trevor, thanks so much. So good to have you here today.
Thank you, guys.
Good luck this season, too.
Thank you.
And now joining us is Don Costanti. He's the Senior Director of Event Presentation and Production here at the K. Don, good morning.
Good morning.
Happy opening day to you.
Yeah, thank you.
So you're in charge of everything we see and hear in this stadium. Do I have that right?
Yeah, pretty much. Everything that you see here, the timing of the game itself.
Meaning what, the timing of the game?
The order of which the elements take place, the anthem, the start of the first pitch, the timing of the inning breaks, making sure that we stay within Major League Baseball's rules, all that type of stuff.
Now, your job has changed dramatically since this place was renovated a few years ago,
absolutely.
Right? Because you sit here, we're sitting just to the left of home plate in the Diamond Club. I'm looking out towards the field, and the lights are flashing. There's just a whole different look to this stadium than there was just 3-4 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. We've added the LED boards, the out-of-town boards, a lot more digital assets. So learning the best use for those and incorporating those into one cohesive event presentation that really adds value to everybody that's coming to the game helps us.
So did you yourself design what we're seeing here right now?
No, we actually outsource a bunch of the stuff. We do a lot in-house, though, but we do outsource a large percentage of our sponsor elements. But every element that you see up on that board does come in front of me and the staff, my production group, and we tweak, we make sure that we give the direction that we think would make for the most visible, most engaging type of LED boards.
It's pretty sensational. It's pretty cool sitting here watching this, even when I've been out here with the kids watching all of this.
Well,
it's amazing. Yeah. Hey, how big is your team?
Not very big. I mean, we have 6 full-time staff members, but not very many. But on game day, exponentially gets a lot bigger. I mean, we end up having a staff of 22, and just in the production room that runs that video board and does the cameras. Then we have from entertainment assets like our K crew, our slugger assistant, our game crew. We have a K crew and a game crew. K crew is our female all interactive team, if you will. They engage our fans, and the game crew implements everything that we do. The promotions, gathers the contest, does the pregame ceremonies. So we're looking, you know, anywhere from 60 to 70 people.
Wow. Yeah. So when during the regular game then, I gather your team and putting on your show is what? Not unlike putting on a TV show every day.
No, absolutely. It's formatted just like that. We have our rundown, our game format, which is a document that really outlines every moment during the afternoon from when the gates open to when the game finishes, has all the content listed out, who our resources are going to be, our hosts, who's going to do what contests we're going to do, and we're filling every moment of it. I mean, obviously the game itself is the star, and then we're filling the downtimes, the breaks, with hopefully engaging, interesting content that people are enjoying.
We're visiting with Don Costanti here at the K. He's Senior Director of Event Presentation and Production. So as you sit here on opening day, big day, capacity crowd expected here, Don, how nervous are you for what's about to happen 3 hours from now?
You know what? This is my 18th year in sports, so I would be lying if I say I don't get nervous every year, especially on opening day, because it's the, you know, technically it's the biggest day of the year. And it's the one day that I'm allowed to kind of go outside the box a little bit and create more of a ceremonial opening to the season. And, you know, I do get nervous. There's a lot of moving parts, a lot of timing, transitions, execution that needs to be correct. And I want what's best for the fans, and we want it to go off right. So
you talk about 70 people on a day like this and trying to coordinate a production that's, what, three and a half hours long.
Yeah.
You make me nervous just hearing you describe it.
Well, people's one thing. It's Mother Nature that always worries me. So.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about the scoreboard out there and what we look at. Straight ahead, dead center field.
Yep.
This brand new scoreboard, just a few years old. Yeah. It's a spectacular piece of equipment. Tell us about it.
Well, you know, it's we call it Crown Vision. It's still, I believe, the largest vertical HD board in all of sports and in the world.
The largest in the world.
Vertical board.
Wow.
The Dallas Cowboys have taken the largest horizontal board.
So hang on to the vertical for a while.
It is absolutely stunning. It's beautiful. You know, I think every player that comes out here and they see this, they're just in awe of it. And I think that, you know, I think it's the to the detriment of the umpires and the officials, because they, you know, really shows errors a lot bigger than other boards might. But no, it's beautiful. It really helps us. It helps us with our sponsors and everything. And more importantly, it helps us to create a very entertaining atmosphere.
Yeah. What's your philosophy, Don, about showing and replaying controversial plays before the home crowd?
You know what? My philosophy versus what the rule is two different things. I come from an NBA background where we were allowed to show everything one time, even in a controversial type play. Major League Baseball is not like that. We're not allowed to show replays if there's doubt. And you know, fans, it's tough. We've tried to get that. We've tried to raise the issue with Major League Baseball in an event presentation aspect, but it's not really going to change, I believe.
Because in this day and age, that's a tough thing for a fan to hear, because you want the information when you're sitting in those seats. You want to know if the ump got the right call or
the
not.
The argument is, you know, I could go home and watch replays and be able to see it over and over again. And I want that same type of an experience when I come to a ballpark. Although we're not able to do that and show every replay, we try to engage everybody in other ways to make it interesting.
Yeah, I'm wondering about this center field scoreboard that's the largest vertical scoreboard and known to mankind these days. Is it distracting to the players, to the umpires? Because there was a piece on the Royals website that talked about some high inside pitches for catchers can be tricky sometimes, losing the ball and all those lights out there.
Well, you know, the funny thing about it is we don't have that at 100% brightness
capacity.
Really? It's tailored quite a bit back.
The players?
For the players, yeah. And it basically is not a distraction. Maybe the first year, it was so big. It's so different. When people came to this ballpark for the first time, it's so massive that it was kind of distracting for some people. But once they saw, we keep it still. It's pretty much the blind's eye out there. I mean, we keep it still during the batter and during play.
Mm-hmm.
So it has not become a distraction. I think people have learned.
Now, what about out in right center field, left center field? You have a wraparound scoreboard there that's at field level. What happens if a player goes chasing a fly ball into that scoreboard? What protects the player from the board itself?
There's
and the board?
There's actually a mesh fence there in front of it that you can't see.
Yeah.
That protects it.
Yeah, okay. So you can't be too hung up on that. Yeah, okay. What's going to happen today that we should be aware of? What's the ceremonial aspect of this game that people might want to know about?
You know what? I think this year we've taken the traditional route. We're in the last couple of years, we took more of a song and dance and entertainment aspect to the ceremony. This year, we're bringing it back to the roots a little bit and going back to what people may have remembered in years past and just doing it with a little extra. And I think the one thing that people can look out for is we're going to do a special tribute to with the All-Star game coming in, doing an All-Star moment.
Yeah. Now, if something goes wrong today or any day, what typically is it that goes wrong, Don?
Timing. Goes wrong. Execution. You know, I stress to my staff over and over again three main words: timing, transition, execution. That's the difference between good and great game presentations. Fortunately, I think when those things don't tend to be perfect, I don't think the average fan sees it. I think it's transparent, but we do notice it, and it drives us nuts.
Yeah.
Those are the biggest things that go wrong for us.
Well, Don, it's been a pleasure. I wish you all the best on your big day today, which is opening day here at the K.
Thank you very much.
That's Don Castanti. He's Senior Director of Event Presentation and Production here at Kauffman Stadium. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date today. We are coming to you live from the K on this very big day in Kansas City, the opening of the 2012 baseball season for a team with very high expectations. Now joining me here in the Diamond Club is Kurt Nelson. He's Director of the Royals Hall of Fame. And, Kurt, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to
How
have
are
you here. Thanks for coming in. What's your favorite exhibit in the Royals Hall of Fame?
Oh, well, I'd say, first off, you have to say the World Series trophy, because that's what we're all here for.
Yeah,
that's what we want to do. We want to get another one of those. We have plenty of space for another couple of them, I would say, before I would even stop.
Yeah.
That's probably my favorite. But as far as Royals history, I think one that gets overlooked, one that's really close to my heart, is the Royals Baseball Academy. It's a really cool story around the founding of the Royals. And it was this idea that Mr. Kauffman had at the beginning that to try to build a competitive team to go outside the regular ways of acquiring talent. So he had this idea, what if we had a baseball school where people might have athletic skills or some sort of talent for that, and then hone that skill even more. And they did that. He built an academy down in Florida. And it actually turned out 15 major league players, 15 guys that would make it to the major leagues. Of course, the most famous one being Frank White.
Wow.
The funny story about the academy is they literally went coast to coast with these tryout camps to find these athletes, and high school coaches would recommend people, and they would do these tryout camps, and they would find these players and select the best of the best and send them down to the Royals Academy. And, of course, the best player that we found out of the baseball academy was about 5 minutes away from Municipal Stadium, which was our home at the time. So yeah, it's kind of an interesting story.
You know, a lot of controversy surrounding Frank White these days, a member of the Royals broadcasting team for a number of years, not part of that team this year. What do you make of it?
Well, you know, Frank's still a part of the Kansas City Royals, and I, as director of the Royals Hall of Fame, have a lot of dealings with him. And, of course, he's an integral part of the – you can't tell the story of the Kansas City Royals without Frank White, one of the key players in all of our 44 – going into our 44th year here. Wow. Of that history. 8 gold gloves, academy graduate, the – cleanup hitter in the World Series as a second baseman, the second baseman to ever bat cleanup in a World Series.
Is that right?
And going through the academy. And, of course, Frank grew up here in Kansas City as well. He wasn't born here. He was born in Mississippi, but he moved here as a very young man, about 3 years old, I think it was. Frank will probably correct me on that, but I think it was something around that. So he really grew up in this community and was involved in baseball from the very beginning. He lived and went to school right down by Municipal Stadium. So he's an integral part of not just the Royals, but part of Kansas City, and he still is. You know, the fact that he might not be on the broadcast team, that's just one thing of Frank White. Frank White is much more than that.
You know, tell us about the different component parts, Kurt, of the Royals Hall of Fame, because there's a number of different aspects to it. You've already talked about one of them, but what else is part of that whole system there?
Well, the name reads, you know, the Hall of Fame itself started in 1986, and that was to recognize the people that have made great contributions to the Kansas City Royals, and we've had 24 inductees over the course of those years.
Who was the latest one?
The latest one was Kevin Apier ours that went in last year, so he was the 24th. The first were Amos Otis and Steve Busby, who went in together in 1986, so it runs the gamut there. So we tell their stories, but inside the building, when we renovated Kauffman Stadium, we wanted to have a place where we could really celebrate the history of the Royals. And when we started doing that project, we wanted to do even more than that, is to tell the history of professional baseball in Kansas City. And we do that in the Hall of Fame to give a little bit more knowledge about the teams that came before us. As I like to say, we don't like to act like as if baseball was invented in 1969, which it wasn't.
The teams that came before us and also the stadiums that came before us, right?
That is true. The Municipal Stadium is the one that most people remember, the one that
22nd in Brooklyn,
I think. 22nd in Brooklyn was Kansas City's home for baseball and other things, really. Mm-hmm. For 50 years, primarily baseball, but the Chiefs played there. That was their original home as well. The longest game in NFL history was played there on Christmas Day in 1971.
Right.
The Beatles played Municipal Stadium.
That's right.
The only time the Beatles were here in Kansas City together, and they played Municipal Stadium. So it's a very colorful history. Of course, Charlie Finley brought a lot of colorful history to its last sort of incarnation. But it was there long before that. It was called Muehlbach Field and Rupert Field and Blues Stadium all those years before. So it was really Kansas City's home for 50 years.
Well, you can design your own ballpark in your Hall of Fame, right? And you can also try your hand at broadcasting too, I think.
You can. We have a really cool interactive where kids like to play it, but it's really for kids of all ages. And you can sort of design your own Kauffman Stadium. You can move the fences in and out. You can change the color of the seats. You can put different amenities around the ballpark. You can put different scoreboards in. You can put a roof on it if you so choose. And then when you get done with your rendition, you can put in your email address, and it'll send you a picture of the stadium that you designed.
So I asked you what your favorite exhibit is at the Hall of Fame. You know, mine out there is that exhibit that has baseballs for every one of George Brett's hits. What,
3,154.
I was just going to say, I was pretty close there. That's a very cool thing.
It really is, and that thing was designed by a local company called Dimensional Innovations, and we worked with them on that. It's a really cool thing. I always joke a little bit. It actually has 3,155 baseballs in it because the actual 3,000th hit baseball of George's is embedded in there as well with the bat that he got that hit with. So it's 3,100. So 3,000 hit is in there twice.
That was kind of a controversial hit, wasn't it?
Well, you know, it was a hard hit ball to second baseman that sort of ate Glenn Hubbard up. You know, George, for me as a Royals, so I would tell George this is the only time I was ever disappointed in George is that particular season. He was coming down and we had one homestand left and George was battling some injuries and it was like, can he get it done this year? He's struggling a little bit. We were on the West Coast. We were in the last game of the road trip. He still needed four hits to get to 3,000. So you're thinking, oh, great, he's going to get it at home. So, and I had tickets to that to the games. And then he got one hit in that last game. And you're thinking, oh, he's definitely going to get it at home. Then he got two. Oh, he'll get it the first game at home. Then he got three. And you're thinking, George, please don't get another hit. I've got tickets. I want to see this. And then he got the fourth. He got the 3,000th out in California. But we had a big celebration for him the next night here in Kansas City.
You know, Kurt, of all the great moments in Royals history, what's the greatest moment, at least in your mind, the moment that really stands out for you? I know winning the World Series was probably the obvious one, but is there something else? I'm even reading last night about some of Bo Jackson's throws from left field, from center field to home plate. What's yours?
There's some thrilling moments. You know, Bo's throw out in Seattle to throw out Harold Reynolds at the plate was fantastic. The Pine Tar game, which I wouldn't say it's a great moment, but it's certainly a memorable moment.
Boy, for sure.
So that's a cool story to remember. I would say the biggest moment in Royals history, outside of winning the World Series, because clearly that's that's the goal, so that's got to be the number one, was George's home run against Goose Gossage in Game 3 of the 1980 American League Championship Series that gave that lead. And we held on and finally beat the Yankees and advanced to the World Series.
Do all stadiums these days have halls of fame?
They don't. Stadiums? You know, some of the newer ballparks, they've sort of started to build things like that. But there's probably about seven of them, something like that. The Reds have a very large one, which is absolutely beautiful. The Cardinals have a lot of memorabilia. They really do a great job with it, but they don't have a building yet. They've been sort of struggling a little bit with some issues, real estate issues around that new ballpark. So they have a lot of stuff. They're going to have a wonderful museum when they finally are able to build their facility. But we beat them to the punch.
Well, Kurt, before you go, what's in the box? You carried a big heavy
box?
Cardboard box down. It's sitting right behind you here in the Diamond Club at the K. What is it?
The one thing that, and I wouldn't let it get out of my sight, that is Alex Gordon's gold glove. So I'm getting ready to take it down there so that we'll have an on-field ceremony for him. He's the fifth Royals outfielder to win a gold glove. And since 1969, only one team has had more than us, and that would be the California Angels, who have seven outfielders who have won gold gloves. But we're very proud of Alex, and we'll present that to him down on the field here in
pregame.
And
didn't he have your outfield last year, the Royals outfield, have more assists than any outfield in Major League Baseball?
Well, Alex led the league, led Major League Baseball with 20 outfield assists. What was really cool about the outfield last year, Jeff Francoeur, Milky Cabrera, who was playing center, and Alex Gordon, they all had 40-plus doubles. That was the first time, and get this, the first time in baseball history that the three primary outfielders for a major league team had 40 doubles or more in a season. First time ever in history. That is hard to do, to have a first in all of major league history.
Well, listen, Kurt, I really enjoyed having you. Good luck with the season. Good luck here on opening day, okay?
Thank you guys for coming out.
That's Kurt Nelson. He's director of the Royals Baseball Hall of Fame. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll visit with Steve Pack, who's not only a longtime season ticket holder, he's been holding season tickets since 1969, even before this stadium was built. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Thank you. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's discussion about teens and alcohol abuse, you'll find that plus Brian McTavish's weekend to-do list at kcur.org. Monday on the program, modern-day methods for seeking out hidden treasures, plus what one country is doing to protect its historic artifacts. Well, we're coming to you live this morning from Kauffman Stadium on this opening day of the 2012 baseball season. We're sitting here in the Diamond Club just to the left of home plate, looking out on just a fabulous sight, which is the field here inside Kauffman Stadium. And such an unusual sight, too, because off to my right, Mike Moustakas is sitting here playing catch, but not with a baseball. He's throwing the football back and forth as members of the grounds crew set up the batting cages, and players, I'm sure, are not too far away from coming out in the field and taking their first whacks here at the K for the 2012 baseball season. Well, I'm joined now by Steve Pack. He's a season ticket holder since, get this, 1969. And, of course, that was before this stadium was even built. And, Steve, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
How exciting is opening day for you here, even after all these years?
It's always exciting. It's very exciting. We look forward to it every year.
Do I have this right? This is your 43rd season, or are there even more on top of that?
No, there are more on top of that. Actually, it goes back from before the Royals and before the A's. My dad had season tickets for the Kansas City Blues, and he took me out as a youngster to games on a regular basis.
222nd in Brooklyn?
Yes, the old stadium, Municipal Stadium.
Well, what is it about baseball and what is it about the K that brings you back game after game after game?
Well, first of all, I think there's just the magic of baseball itself. Time is irrelevant. You're not playing per quarter, per minutes, per hour. Time is just totally irrelevant. And the other part of it is the memories. So you have both the past that you draw from and the hope that springs eternal every opening day.
Now, do you attend literally every single game?
No, not every game.
Thank goodness. I was going to worry about you if you said yes.
No. I make a point of sharing our tickets with some of the people I work with and their families, and especially members, people that I work with who have young kids. Because we literally raised our kids here. This was our summertime activity, and I have three sons. They're now not in Kansas City, New York and L.A., but they were literally raised at the ballpark.
Are they season ticket holders in New York and L.A.?
No, they're not. But they do subscribe to the Major League Baseball channel so that they can watch all the Royals games. Huh. I think regardless of where they live, they are died in true Royals fans.
Now, I've got to ask you, Steve, there were some seasons out here that weren't all that whippy in terms of winning teams and success and home runs and all the things you want to see as a fan of the home team. How did you manage to endure through the dry years?
That's a great question. Again, this just became like a home away from home in the summertime. This was where we would go when they played night games in the evening to watch the team play. My dad, I think, had an interesting insider foresight. He got tickets originally by the visiting team dugout, what he told me his thought was that way you would always see and be exposed to players from other teams. You'd know your own home team. You'd know at that time the Blues and then the A's.
Yeah.
You'd know those players, but you'd get to see players up close from the other team.
Where are your seats these days after nearly 50 years of sitting out here, Steve? I imagine you get to sit pretty much wherever you want, don't you?
Well, actually, they're almost where they were going way back to the Municipal Stadium. Our seats were right next. We had two front row seats right by the on-deck circle for the visiting team and two seats right behind it. And when the A's came, they honored the fact that we had had those tickets with the Blues, and when the Royals built the new stadium, they also honored that, and so our seats are still down there, and that provided an incredible experience for my kids and for the kids that we share the seats with, you know, people now, because they can actually talk to the players, and during the 70s and 80s, the players, and I think it may be coming back
again, just now, especially with the youth that we have on the Royals team, the players would relate to the fans and the fans to the players. And it was there was a chemistry and a bonding there that I think was unusual. Especially in Kansas City, I think the way the fans related to the Royals in the good times. But again, there are a lot of us that stuck through the bad times, and you just keep hoping that it'll come back.
Meaning the players would relate to the fans even during the game, Steve? Was there chit-chat going on, or was it mostly before and afterwards?
Well, one interesting, cute story. My middle son, when he was about 5 years old, and I believe we were playing the Yankees, and there was a player for the Yankees who was huge. He was a DH, and Cliff Johnson was his name.
I remember that.
And he was really a big, intimidating-looking guy. And he walked up to my five-year-old and said, "Touch my bat," when he was in the on-deck circle. And my five-year-old tentatively reached up and touched his bat. And then he said, "If I don't get a hit, I'm going to whoop you." And he went up to got in the batter's box, and I think Gubazov struck him out on like three straight pitches. And with that, my kid turned and ran up the stands. Never seen him move quite so fast.
Well, over the years, you've seen some remarkable players come through here, not only for the Royals, but for the visiting teams, too.
Mm-hmm.
Who stands out in your mind? Who are players that really made a mark in your own memory, Steve, of folks you saw here?
George Bell would be one, and he also, it was funny because
he
had
was with the
Toronto Blue Jays and then with the Cubs, but my son I was talking about who was five with the Cliff Johnson story, he and George Bell had some kind of chemistry, and it got to the point when Toronto would come in here, we would typically get with George Bell and go to breakfast at least. If they had a three-day homestand, we'd go to breakfast with Bell. My middle son, I think, takes after his mother. He loves jewelry. And George Bell had a diamond ring that spelled out his name, Bell, in diamonds.
And I have one of those, too, by the way.
Doesn't everybody?
Yes, yeah.
But David just bonded with him, and I think my son reminded George of one of his kids. So whenever the Toronto Blue Jays were here, we always would get together with them. And what was amazing is Bell would introduce us to other players, and there were a couple. They'd come in. If there was time, we'd get in a round of golf, because a lot of the ball players also play golf.
Yeah.
Another player that had a extraordinary impact or relationship was Mark McGwire when he played for the A's. And we were out here his rookie year with our two sons every game. My oldest son, first of all my boys love to play baseball.
Mm-hmm.
But as they grew up, they would learn and memorize the statistics and the names of all the players.
Sure.
So it got to the point where at the end of when in the second season of McGwire's career, he turned to my wife and I and said, "Are you going to have Zach," that was our oldest son, "here at the game tomorrow night?" And we said, "Sure, you know, we're here just about every night." He said, "Well, would it be all right if I took him out to lunch before the game?"
Oh, no kidding.
And my wife, you know, we said, "Fine." And so at that time, they stayed at the Alameda Hotel, the visiting teams did, which is now, I think, the Intercontinental.
Sure.
Anyway, my wife drives up, and she thinks she's going to drop off. I think Zach may have been 8 or 9 at that time, drop off our eldest son to have lunch with McGwire. But I think she thought she was going to go to the lunch. And McGwire said, no, this is just a guy's thing. And he went and had lunch with my eldest son. After lunch, he called Nike and he got him shoes. He gave him 3 brand-new bats when they come in a sleeve that haven't been used, autographed them. Took him into the clubhouse, introduced him to La Russa as his nephew so he could get him in the clubhouse because you're only permitted to have family. And that relationship continued to when my son went to college in Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. When the A's played in Baltimore, they'd still get together after a game. It was incredible.
How hard was it for your son then just to see what happened to Mark McGwire after the home run year and all the allegations and all that stuff?
It was devastating. I mean, he was first of all, we knew Mark's younger brother was a physical trainer, weightlifter. In fact, Mark said his younger brother actually was more athletic than he was, and if he hadn't had an eye injury, would have been a Major League Baseball player. But we could see him bulking up over the time, because if you look at pictures, and we have pictures of Mark when he first came up, he was very tall, always tall, but somewhat lean.
Yeah.
And over time, that leanness became bulk, but no one suspected back then that he was, that anything was going on.
So does Zach still have a relationship with him today, or is that over?
No, it really ended, I think, when he went to St. Louis after about the first year in St. Louis. After he set the home run record, he used to give Zach his code name when they traveled so that he could call him at a hotel in Leadship.
That's amazing. But
after that, it became very difficult to get in touch with him, or buffers.
Well, great memories.
Absolutely.
Steve, it's been a pleasure to have you. Thanks for taking some time, and enjoy the 2012 year. It's going to be a
pleasure
good year, it looks like.
It looks
it?
Like it's a great year. The Royals have it's just like it seems like the 80s all over again, with people like Hosmer and Gordon and Moose coming up, Butler.
Yeah.
You've got young, very talented players and management that wants to retain them. I think it's going to be very exciting.
That's Steve Pack, longtime season ticket holder dating back to the 1960s. Steve, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Well, now let's wrap up our day here at the K by taking a closer look at just how good this team is going to be this year. Now joining me is KCUR's Greg Eklund to give us a rundown on this team and its prospects for 2012 as we sit here at the K overlooking the ballpark and the field just hours before the first pitch is thrown here on opening day. And Greg, always good to have you.
Glad to be here,
Steve. How big a kick is opening day for you after all these years?
I love opening day.
How can you not, right?
And when you see the green grass and the smell of the ballpark with everything cooking prior to the gates opening up.
A lot of food on the grill right now, isn't there? And a lot of people tailgating out front, too, I noticed on the way in here today.
Milling about, I think it's a great day for celebration.
Sports Illustrated just predicted that this team would finish second in the division behind the Detroit Tigers. You buying that?
Yes, I am.
Sounds about right, doesn't it?
Yeah, because Detroit obviously is the team to beat, barring any injuries. When you pick up a Prince Fielder and you've got Miguel Cabrera, I mean, they've got some big guns in their lineup. And then when you have an anchored pitching staff of Justin Verlander, that's hard to beat. But anything less than a winning record in Kansas City would be a huge disappointment this year, because their guys are experienced now, they are acclimated to the major leagues, and it's time to take the next step and live up to that marketing campaign of this being our time, as they say.
So, Greg, you think this is at least a 500 ball club this year?
It absolutely should be. And then you have teams that are struggling out of the gate in the division, Minnesota and Cleveland, and for instance, this weekend should be a winning series weekend for the Kansas City Royals.
Mm-hmm. The Cleveland Indians, then, this is a team that the Royals should be able to handle okay.
Yes. I mean, the Indians are coming in here struggling.
Yeah. Again, we're sitting here at the K today on opening day. They're getting ready to open the Diamond Club, and they're opening up the gates to the public in just 9 minutes here on this opening day. Does a 500 finish or slightly better, Greg, get the Royals into the playoffs?
No. Not just above 500. I would think that the strength of the league is going to be either in the you always think in the East with the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Tampa Bay Rays.
Right.
But in the West, I think the Rangers have a clear advantage over the other teams there. But the Angels might make a race out of it out West. But in the Central Division, it almost always comes to the division winner getting into the playoffs.
So, but at least the conversation has begun that even someone like me is asking Greg Eklund, do the Royals have a chance for the playoffs?
Well, what we're looking for, I think, here in Kansas City is a September to be interesting, because we have always seen the Royals out of it by the All-Star break, and by that time, the Chiefs are starting spring training, and for all intents and purposes, the baseball season is over. So for a September to be interesting with the Royals team in contention, that at least gives us some hope.
We're visiting with Greg Eklund from KCUR about the prospects for this year's Kansas City Royals. Greg, this team has played 6 games so far. They've won 3 of them. What do you think of the squad so far? What have we learned about this team through the first 6 games?
Well, they've had some major injuries in spring training that they've had to overcome. I mean, when you have a bright young catcher like Salvador Perez getting injured, and they've had to pick up a catcher from the Houston Astros to help out in that regard. And then you have your all-star closer, Joaquin Soria, out for the season. And one of the games the other day determined by the relief pitching, with Jonathan Broxton hitting two straight batters to force in the winning run.
Not what you want to see.
No, it isn't. And that's where the major question is with this team, is how they'll fare without that closer in the back of the pen.
What else have we learned about this team through six games? How's the hitting? How's the defense?
You know, the defense is good. We had a solid defense last year. Unfortunately, it was an error by our shortstop that opened up the big inning for the Oakland Athletics the other day. But more often than not, he's an outstanding shortstop and will help this team and help save a lot of runs, as opposed to the physical errors he committed the other day. But the defense is pretty solid.
We were just talking about the hitting last season. Each of the three leading outfielders for the Royals all hitting 40 doubles or more in one season, an all-time major league record. Can you expect to see something like that duplicated this year?
Well, the center field is the question, because you traded one of those guys.
Yeah,
because they picked up Sanchez as a starting pitching to shore up that area of the team. And Lorenzo Cain yesterday was placed on the DL, because the disabled list, because he has a groin injury, and they don't want to take any chances with him to re-aggravate it. So out of the gate, it may not be apparent. But I think he's the kind of guy down the road, once he rounds into Major League Baseball shape and gets around to hitting Major League pitching consistently, potentially they could match that.
Yeah. There's a player on the Royals team, maybe the most popular, well-known player now, really two of them, Alex Gordon, Eric Hosmer. But when you talk about this team and you talk to people around the league about the Royals, Hosmer's name comes up all the time. This is a guy who seems to have one of those futures that's, they call it unlimited in baseball circles. Is it really?
I believe it is. This guy's a can't miss, and he's already showing it. He's had a couple of home runs in the early going. He scored what looked to be the winning run against the Oakland Athletics when he reached base in the late inning situation at Oakland the other day. It didn't turn out that way, but he's a guy who is in that number three hole and in the lineup, and that's where you reserve your best hitters, and I think he can live up to that.
Now, he's only been in the league for a short time, a season really.
This is his first full season with the Royals.
Is this too much too fast?
No, I don't think so. I think he's well adjusted. He's taken all the stops necessary, and he is seasoned, and he knows what he's doing both at the plate and on the field. He'll learn a few things here and there, but I think he's got the ability to overcome any deficiencies in his game.
We're visiting with KCUR's Greg Eklund. You know, Greg, tell us about the manager, Ned Yost. What kind of manager is he? What does he do to make this thing work right?
Well, he's a former catcher, so he brings that perspective to the game where he has he knows how to handle pitchers. And, you know, some people may question the handling of pitchers, but that's going to be questioned for any manager, because that's the biggest question mark any manager has when he's managing a ball club, when to make a decision on leaving a pitcher in or taking a pitcher out. And Ned is basing his on experience as a catcher. He knows those kinds of things. He's an ex-ball player. The players could relate to him. And on the other hand, you know, he lets them play the game. Last year, he allowed them to learn the game trial by fire, so to speak. This year, we've noticed in the early going, he may have a quicker hook, and he may manage this team a little bit differently this year because they're a little bit more experienced and more expected to win.
He wants to win this year.
No question. I mean, he wanted to win last year, but I think he believes he's got the guys who are in a position to bring them at least with a winning record this year.
Is that job of manager really as tough as it looks? Because it doesn't look that tough.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, you see them in the dugout. You don't know what's going through their minds, but they're always thinking an inning or two ahead and situational things, and they're flashing signs and everything like that. And that, with, you know, addressing the media day after day before a ball game, there's no exception. You're addressing the media before every game. So that there's that part of it that the average fan doesn't see either.
You know, you just got to talk about opening day for a second, Greg. And I'm looking out in the field here. The Royals have taken the field now for the first time as a squad, all stretching, working out, getting limbered up for this opening day. Opening day is a big deal in Kansas City.
It still is,
despite all the rough seasons we've had stacked back to back to back for so long now.
Sure, and you see the banners hanging, or at least videos showing the banners and the flags flying in the breeze in the outfield. I mean, yeah, there's no question that this is a special day.
Well, the sun is trying to peek out here. The folks or players are out on the field stretching and warming up, and we're getting ready for a great day at the K here for the Royals home opener. Greg, always good to have you here.
Thanks, Steve.
Good luck on opening day.
Appreciate it. Good luck to the Royals.
Yeah, absolutely. That's KCUR's Greg Eklund. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Monday on the program, modern day methods for seeking out hidden treasures, plus what one country is doing to protect its historic artifacts. Our thanks to Toby Cook and Brian Hempstead and the staff of the Royals and Kauffman Stadium for all their hospitality here at the K. We had help today from KCUR's Kathleen Pointer, Danny Alexander, Maria Carter, and the number one Royals fan of all time, Kim Noble. The show is produced by Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star. Have a great weekend, all, and you are up to date.